And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, today I've got a great friend of mine on. He and I have been, pals, buddies, friends, companions, whatever you want to call it, for some years now. Victor Thorne. He writes for American Free Press, one of their most outstanding reporters, maybe the most outstanding. But he also writes books. He writes a lot of books. And I like his books best of all because, you know, I read them and, well, he knows how to speak. He knows how to talk to you in words. That's very important today. Now, I have his newest book here. It really, when I saw it, I love the cover. First of all, it's a great, very colorful, entertaining cover. It's got some of my favorite people in pictures. I think you'll see. My tongue is firmly in my cheek right now. But it's entitled America's Racial Powder Keg. America's Racial Powder Keg. Let me give you a little bit of what the book is about here. Here's a table of contents. Get this. Let's see. We started a politically incorrect look at race. Abraham Lincoln says send them back. There's all about Mandela. Of South Africa, of course, the truth about him. There's about Barack Obama. And it talks about these cities, Camden, New Jersey, and others, Chicago, where things have gotten worse and worse and worse as the black population has increased in those cities. Then there's the Trayvon Martin case. There's the Michael Brown situation. All through here, it's just incredible. It says blacks are not victim of white privilege and proves it, of course. There's you'll read about Ferguson, Missouri, that's in here. Who's to blame for the state of black communities? And by the way, there's also a little section called Three U.S. Presidents Speak Out About Race. So this is just an outstanding book. Victor Thorne, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Well, thanks for having me on, Tex. It's always great to be here with you and your audience. And, it's much appreciated because with this book that was just released by American Free Press, it's one of the most timely books out there right now. And something is coming to a head in this country. And, you know, fortunately, we have people like you that have the courage to speak openly about the problem and not have to, you know, walk on eggshells or tap dance around the issue.
Well, you know, one of the things that we have here is we have a number of black friends, you know, throughout the United States. And I'll tell you, they contact me and they know that America's a racial powder keg and they think what's going on is absolutely ridiculous. And you know, let's just look at the front cover. We're going to know who the culprits are from your front cover, Victor. But here you've got Al Sharpton. You've got Jesse Jackson. You've got Eric Holder. And, of course, you have the ultimo, the primo, Barack Obama. And then, almost comparable with them, I think, is a person from the Black Power group.
Yeah, the Black Panthers.
Yeah, the Black Panthers. I think it's the same guy that was stood before a voting, area and like he was going to beat up blacks, or intimidating whites, that is, that dared come to vote there. And they let him off with that. But here are these, let's just look at these four men at the top and not even counting the fifth one. And all of these four men, I mean, to me, they're four of the worst people that have ever come to the front in America. I mean, they really are all worthless people. Now, I don't mean that they're worthless as human beings. And I'm sure that God loves them as much as he loves you and I. I'm simply saying that their acts, ACTS, what they have done and are doing to America has made America a racial powder keg. Am I being accurate in saying that, Victor?
Well, you are, and I'm glad you mentioned that you have a lot of black friends, because in this book, a lot of the chapters, I actually interviewed black leaders, black ministers, black political figures, and these are the individuals that don't point to whites and say that whites are the problem in America. These black leaders are the ones that point to those individuals on the cover of America's racial powder keg and said, those people right there are the real problem for blacks in America right now. And I couldn't agree more with them, because they say, in essence, that prior to the Civil Rights Act in 1965, that blacks were making a steady climb ever since the Civil War days up until the 1960s, that slowly but surely they were integrating into society, they had jobs, they were all members of the church, the family was still intact. And what happened was is that the government stepped in through Lyndon Johnson and then all of the government welfare programs since then, and what it's done is basically decimated the black family. And that's the root cause of all of this, Tex, is that the blacks, by and large, don't go to church anymore. The families are divided because they can't collect welfare if the man is in the house. They're forced to live in these housing projects and so forth. And when Eric Holder and Barack Obama and Al Sharpton, when they call people like us racists, what I turn it right back around on them and say, the real racists in America against blacks are the very blacks that are holding them down. And I even go so far as to say that if you can liken blacks today living in the projects to a plantation, the plantation owners aren't whites like they were 200 years ago. The plantation owners today are Eric Holder and Barack Obama and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. They make enormous amounts of money off of them, and what they are is just snake oil salesmen that are exploiting and duping the blacks that don't know any better. And you know, all they have to do is just point the finger at us, point the finger at white cops or white politicians or white society in general, and they, like, you know, like the Pied Piper, they lead them along. But what these black leaders in this book have done is they're exposing Obama and company and saying, no, 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 that's the real problem right there. And I give a great deal of credit to these individuals for speaking out and not just towing the party line of the NAACP, et cetera. So, and, you know, it has all gotten much, much worse over the last 6 years. That since Obama was elected president, he's empowered all of these individuals that are exploiting the blacks. And you were right, Texas. Step number one came when this Black Panther leader who was standing outside of a polling station in Philadelphia with his jack boots on and a billy club in his hand and intimidating white voters. What happened was is that he was already convicted. All Eric Holder, when he came in with Obama, all he had to do was sentence him. And what Eric Holder did was he let this guy go, this Black Panther leader go, and that set the tone right then. It was a message to all of these rabble-rousers saying, things are different now and you have free reign. And what it's done is it's culminating in what we saw last fall in Ferguson, outside of St. Louis, where there were massive riots and arson and all kind of damage. So it's only gotten worse ever since Obama came into office, and he's the one who said that, you know, that he was going to be the colorblind president and that race relationships were going to be, you know, fantastically better since he got in. Well, I think almost everybody would agree they've gotten much worse.
They absolutely have. Now, here's the problem that I have. Your book is an outstanding book. It should be in every bookstore in America. In fact, they ought to have floor displays floor stands with this book. But it will not be, and I want to encourage people to order it from this ministry. Maybe order more than one copy and pass it around to their friends. It won't be because you speak common sense. You speak plain truth. You actually want to help black men and women to succeed. You want them to be true Americans. You want them to be the best person they possibly could be. That's politically incorrect today, is it not?
Well, it is, and you and I are in full agreement that one of the worst cancers in this country right now is political correctness. This is a toxin that's coursing through the veins of this country. And until we have more people like you, Tex, and myself, and those at American Free Press that are standing up and speaking these common sense truths, that nothing is ever going to change. Well, people say, well, how about Fox News? Well, if you watch Fox News, they still tiptoe around this issue because they're so afraid of a backlash by Al Sharpton or anybody else that they still pussyfoot around it. And it's I liken it, Tex, to you've seen those houses out on the California shoreline that are, you know, built right on the edge of a cliff overlooking the ocean. And they're already in a precarious situation. Well, a little bit of earth below it starts falling, caving away, and a little bit more and a little bit more until the house is on the verge of falling in. Well, at that point, you have two decisions. You either have to make a very firm decision to shore this up and you know, put this house back on safe ground, or you have to evacuate the house and let it collapse into the ocean. Well, that's where I think the point we've reached now in this country is that our house is teetering on this edge, and if we don't do something fast, it's going to fall. It's going to collapse into the ocean, and all we have to do is ask, what if the people that hate us were in power? You know, what if, I mean, Barack Obama is in power, but can you imagine if him and his ilk were in power for, like, say, 60 years? Yes. What would happen? Because that's what happened to Detroit, which is a perfect example. For the last 60 years, there's been nothing but black leaders and white liberals. And Detroit now is a third world country, in essence. Well, what would happen if Obama and Holder had their way for the next 60 years? Well, that's what's happening through political correctness, is if the longer that we keep our mouths shut, the more they get away with, and the more Ferguson's, the more racial powder kegs we're going to see explode across this country. And it's time now in the year 2015, it's time finally for everybody to not be pushed around anymore, to stand up and say, we're not going to take it. And this political correctness is done with. We have to start calling things what they are and speaking the truth instead of living in fear, which is what we've been doing.
We really have. And you know, I met a couple of guys here this last week. They're both black men, and without getting talking about their careers or whatever, they're both working men, blue collars, right? And boy, do they ever work! And these guys, they work till 7 o'clock every night. They're married men. Then I think about all of those living in the ghettos that are just the stand around on the sidewalks and sell dope, that, you know, torment their neighbors, that do nothing, that wear the pants hanging down. One of these two guys I'm going to talk about to you, and I'm not going to give you their names because it really doesn't matter. They're just two solid black men. But one of them was playing a radio, and I heard his music. It was beautiful music. It was black music, but from probably the 70s. And I said, "So you like beautiful music?" He's, "Oh yes, I really do. I like music with a rhythm, with a voice." And he says, I can't stand this rap music. That's just trash." And it sort of surprised me, you know. And I asked the guys, "Well, how old are you?" He said he was 47. Well, you know, he somehow missed all of these monstrosities and these actions that are turning black men into slaves. And isn't that really the truth? Aren't isn't Eric Holder, Barack Obama, Al Sharpton, are they not really turning black men into pitiful little slaves today?
Well, it's come full circle almost, in that if you go into these projects or these inner city ghettos and look at who the heroes are, Tex. The heroes are pimps, they're drug dealers. Going to prison is a badge of honor because it elevates your status. They all speak Ebonics. And what irritates me the most is that we have now a black president for the last 6 years who has the bully pulpit. He's on TV, it seems like, every single day talking about this thing. You know, yesterday he was criticizing Christians again. Well, with this bully pulpit, why doesn't Barack Obama go out there and tell them, you can't speak Ebonics anymore? This rap music is poison through your system. All they do is glorify violence, drug abuse, stealing, on and on and on. Tell them, pull up your pants. You can't expect to function in our society looking and acting and speaking the way that you do. Well, if he would say that, the same thing would happen is if a kid is into projects, and if he goes to school and he studies hard, and he tries to speak properly. Well, what happened is all the other black kids in the neighborhood beat him up and make fun of him. They say he's an Uncle Tom. He's selling out to whitey. He's becoming part of the white system. And so what they've done is they've so corroded the minds of these poor people in that success is viewed as the enemy. Other than, you know, if you're pimping out women or selling drugs, that kind of success is good. But going out and getting a job and working hard, that's selling out to whitey. And Barack Obama could do so much good for the black community. And what he's done, Tex, and you used the exact right word, is he's making the black community slaves by making them dependent on welfare. And the longer you're out of the system, the longer you collect a check in the mail, the harder it is to reintegrate oneself back into that system. And what they're doing is they have an agenda, they have a plan, is the more people they can make dependent on the government, the more people will vote for the Democratic Party and keep those like them in power. So what they're doing is they're only looking out for their own position in this world. And they don't give a darn about anybody else that they have to trample on and basically exploit and keep them down on the plantation. So, you know, you hit the nail on the head, and those guys that you saw that are out there working, they're the ones that should be held up as the heroes and the role models, not these rap stars and the pimps and the guys in prison that come out, you know, the Crips and the Bloods and so forth. It's doing nobody any good.
No, absolutely not. And I'll tell you, Eric Holder and Barack Obama, for example, are privileged people. I mean, these people were taken, and white people made them into stars, gave them their degrees at the top universities in America. And of course, Barack Obama had a white mother. And he had white grandparents that raised him. So he knows no blackness as such. So it seems like he's embracing this trash when he could be a great role model, as you say. Well, of course, Sharpton, he's just a crook. But by the way, you mentioned Fox News. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but the chief guy there, Bill O'Reilly, he has a number one cable mm-hmm. show on TV, Bill O'Reilly of the O'Reilly Factor, actually went to a dinner with Al Sharpton, and something that they don't want you to know, but he gave him a $30,000 love gift.
Yeah, I remember that.
For his corrupt ministry. So here he is favoring Al Sharpton. How can they say he gives the guy $30,000 for his crooked ministry, so-called? So, you know, the whole thing is a plot, and I guess that he thought maybe Sharpton would say something good about him. and his TV show. But so all of these, Eric Holder, of course, you know, he was in the White House during the Clinton period and worked in the Justice Department. And he arranged the very corrupt pardon of Mark Rich. You'll remember that one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, these guys, they're all corrupt. They're all liars. These are not men that blacks should aspire to be like, are they?
No, they're not. And, you know, I have to take this one step further. And starting in 2007, when I was writing for American Free Press right then, I started researching Barack Obama, because back then everybody thought Hillary was the shoe-in. She was going to be coronated as the queen and become the president. Well, the powers that be had different ideas, and they put Obama on this meteoric rise to stardom. Well, I started researching him hot and heavy back in 2007, and I discovered real early on that this guy doesn't like white people a whole lot. He sat there in Reverend Wright's church and, you know, heard this GD America. And for 20 years, all of this racial animosity and aggression towards whites. Well, I started writing articles every week for American Free Press. And they eventually became a book called Front Man. I originally entitled it Barack Obama Devil. And I warned everybody far and wide. I said, we can't put this guy in power. Do you know what this guy's all about? Well, nobody listened, or I should say not enough people listened, and they tell me, hope and change, you gotta believe in hope and change. And I said, this is snake oil, don't fall for the magic trick, look at what this guy's really about. Well, too many white people voted for Barack Obama, and now 98% of blacks voted for him in 2008, that's understandable. But what the lesson we have to learn from this is, we can't be fooled again by this razzle-dazzle that Obama and his people threw our way, that we have to become more adept at looking through the magic text, because that's what they did. They cast a spell on America with hope and change, and it was emptier than a tin drum. There was nothing to hope and change. Obama even admitted it. So when we look at the youths, the black youths in the projects or the ghettos, they're doing what they've been taught to do. That's their environment. When we look at people like Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, they're only out for number one, themselves. Obama, of course, you know, too many people warned. You sent out many warnings about Obama. Not enough people heeded our warnings. So what we have to do now is stand back and reevaluate this and say, how could we have been fooled like this? And look what it's done over the last 6 years to this nation, that you have now this thing called the knockout game, where not only, you know, 30- and 40-year-old whites walking down a sidewalk, but sometimes 60- and 70-year-old grandmothers and grandfathers walking down a sidewalk, and some black kid comes up and punches them in the back of the head and knocks them unconscious, sometimes even killing them. You know, Ferguson, we saw what happened there. Too many instances around this country, the message has been sent that the game has changed now, and it's open season on whites, and we can no longer live this way, Tex. So, you know, we have to look at the electoral process, and we can't fall for this ruse again.
Well, it's interesting to me that the whole system is skewed to lie to Americans. But we're not told about Trayvon Martin. Not the truth about him. You did in your book. We're not told about the Ferguson situation or these other ones. In every case, they're lied to. In fact, many of the cases where blacks riot and beat up white women and rape them and gang rapes and all kinds of horrible statistics that you have in your book, were made so that we will not understand these things. In fact, they don't even cover many of these things. It's amazing that the media itself is tainted toward blacks, to lie about blacks, and to paint whites as some kind of privileged race. Isn't that true, that the media are behind a lot of this.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you a good example, Tex, and I didn't even find this out until a week or two after Powder Keg went to the printer. So this isn't included in the book, but I'll tell you the story anyway. Everybody knows this guy named Eric Garner. He was the 300-pound black guy up in New York City that the cops, you know, allegedly strangled to death. Well, what happened was that he died from a heart attack from being too overweight, and he had asthma and so forth. Well, here's the story, and everyone's like, look at these cops, and he's saying, I can't breathe, and blah, blah, blah. Well, here's the real story of why the cops were called to look at Eric Garner. He'd already been arrested 31 times previously, 31 times, in and out, in and out, in and out, this revolving door of prisons. So 31 times he's been to jail. Well, what's Eric Garner doing? Has he learned his lesson after 31 times? No. Is he out getting a job? No. What he's doing is he's selling, they're called Lucy's, they're loose cigarettes. He's selling loose cigarettes to all the black kids in the neighborhood that are 10, 11, 12 years old that aren't old enough to go out and buy cigarettes for themselves. Now, who called the cops on Eric Garner? It wasn't white people because no white people live in that neighborhood. It was the black parents that live in that neighborhood. And they'd see their kids coming home with cigarettes. And they'd say, you know, 10-year-old kid, where'd you get that? Oh, that fat guy down there. Eric Garner sold it. So the parents got so fed up, they called the police. The police come, and they're telling the guy, look, there's laws against selling loose cigarettes. There's also laws against selling cigarettes to minors. They were getting ready to arrest him. What does Eric Garner do? He starts lipping off to him. He starts cursing at him. He starts resisting arrest. So the cops try to arrest him. They put him to the ground. He has a heart attack. He has asthma. He can't breathe, and he dies. Now, is Eric Garner the victim of racism? No. Blacks called the police on Eric Garner. He was a black man selling cigarettes to little 10-year-old black kids. That's the real story that nobody knows.
Yeah, you're right. Arrested 31 times. However, I would have to say there, I think it's plain murder from what I saw by the cops. So, yeah, I'm no apologist for the cops. And whether he said, I can't breathe or not, they made it sure that he couldn't breathe. I saw that they just kept holding on to the guy. They wanted to kill him. So what we have is a situation where the blacks are so vicious, so cruel, so full of crime, that sure, the cops go after them. Why shouldn't they? They're the ones committing all the crimes, right?
Well, that's true, and, you know, there is such a, you know, a backlash against the police, and all I would say is that in these black neighborhoods, if there's such a hatred for the police force, many of, you know, in New York City, 60% of the police force is non-white.
But
if there's such a hatred of the police in these, you know, in the ghettos, in Harlem, whatever, they should do a little experiment and just say, okay, how about if we take all the police out for a month?
Oh. Whoa.
See what happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, huh? You and I know what would happen then.
Big
trouble
in
the
exactly.
black communities. Well, I'll tell you, we're going to take a little break here. When we come back, we got a lot more. I want to ask about some of these statistics. Incredible. The number of rapes of white women by blacks. And then you look at the number of rapes of, well, it's just that no black women are being raped by white men. I mean, in every case, crime. Of course we need racial profiling. Absolutely. And I'm going to ask my guest today, I'm going to ask him, Victor, do we need racial profiling? Maybe he doesn't agree with me. But I think you do, absolutely. We'll be right back after this message. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. America's racial powder keg. How a violent dependency state has been created within the black community. This is by Victor Thorne and some other experts that Victor's talked to and interviewed and so forth. It's a terrific book. It's not long. You can read it in well, if you're fast, I guess you can read it in one night, but it'll probably take you a couple of days, because you want to read this book with really a thinking mind. I mean, you won't find anything written in this book. You're not going to find it in your local newspapers. You're not going to find it in Newsweek, Time Magazine, on the internet, except for sites, of course, like Victor Thorne's American Free Press or A Power of Prophecy. But it's incredible here. By the way, I want to mention that Pete Papaheracles, who works for American Free Press, also has written some of the material on this. He did a great job as well. Now, let me give you a little bit of what the book is about here. Here's a table of contents. Get this. Let's see. We started a politically incorrect look at race. Abraham Lincoln says send them back. There's all about Mandela of South Africa, of course, the truth about him. There's about Barack Obama. And it talks about these cities, Camden, New Jersey, and others, Chicago, where things have gotten worse and worse and worse as the black population has increased in those cities. Then there's the Trayvon Martin case. There's the Michael Brown situation. All through here, it's just incredible. It says blacks are not victim of white privilege, and proves it, of course. There's you'll read about Ferguson, Missouri, that's in here. Who's to blame for the state of black communities? And by the way, there's also a little section called Three U.S. Presidents Speak Out About Race. So this is just an outstanding book. I don't think I've ever come upon another book that will tell you the truth. Tell you the truth. What you're going to see on they'll argue all day and all night about, you know, who did what. Was it Darren Wilson, or the cop at Ferguson, Missouri, or was it Michael Brown, or all these, or Trayvon Martin? You know, the can you believe that Obama said, this guy could be my son, brother? I bet he could have. No doubt he'd have taught him to hate whites, as he did. But this book does answer that question. Let me read it to you again. How a violent dependency state has been created within the black community. Now, I graduated from high school in 1962. That was, you know, right before the Johnson years. He took over in 63. And everything changed. Everything changed. I mean, blacks were on their way. The situation in the southern states was looked down upon. Whites who discriminated were looked down upon. The blacks were going to be free. They were going, there's no doubt about it. Martin Luther King or not, he was just an afterthought. And I know he died. I know he's a great hero and all that to millions of people. But I'm telling you, the white people of America were after a new situation. They wanted equal rights. What they did not want and have gotten today is a situation described in this book. We have become slaves. We have become pawns of a very liberal communistic government. And blacks are getting shafted. And we also are being shafted. And this needs to be set aright. I want you to understand how deep I feel about this. If you're a black person listening to me, you've got to have this book. You may not agree with all of it. You may have voted for Barack Obama, but you have to examine your own heart, your own thoughts and actions. You know, you can't just vote for somebody because of the same color you are. Okay? That's wrong. And as Victor Thorne said, 98% of blacks voted the first time, first election, for Barack Obama. What did you do that for? What for? Did you vote for him again the second time around? Goodness gracious, we need to take you to Section 7 ward at some hospital where they look at the mentally ill. I mean, this is a terrible situation we're into. Now, I want you to buy this book. Please do. It's $20. $20. and we've got enough copies. If we need more, I'm sure Victor Thorne can give them to us. For $20, please add $5 for shipping and handling. Send that to Power of Prophecy or to Tex Mars, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. That's Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Now, you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. I think we've got this book pictured right now on the website. On the home page, you'll see it described there. You can use your charge card or your PayPal card or whatever and order it right from the online site that we have, powerofprophecy.com. And let's see, how else can they get it? Oh, yeah, you can phone us, of course, Monday through Friday. Call toll-free. Don't pay for it. Just pick it up and dial it. It's 1-800-234-9673. Okay, let's return now to our program and to Victor Thorne. Victor, why did you write this book?
The reason I wrote this book and put it together was that at a certain point you reach critical mass. And anyone familiar with that term realizes that critical mass means you reach a point where there's no return. And when you mentioned a little bit earlier Bill O'Reilly, and I mentioned a little bit earlier how people need to stand up, well, Tex, when I heard you a few moments ago, this is the kind of voice, this is the kind of man we need to appear on Bill O'Reilly. Now, of course, Bill O'Reilly is not going to schedule you to come on the O'Reilly Factor, but that the words that you said is exactly what this country needs to hear. This is a strong message. This is a message from a man that, you know, like that old movie Network. You know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. That's the reason why I wrote this book. When I saw what happened in Ferguson, it brought back flashbacks because I used to live in Los Angeles from 1986 to 1993. Well, in 1992 was when the LA riot occurred, and there's a chapter in Powder Keg about that. Well, when I moved to Los Angeles, you know, I'd lived in Pennsylvania, I'd lived down south a little bit. I didn't have a racist bone in my body. When I moved to L.A. and I saw and I lived through the L.A. riots, and I was in them firsthand because of the company I worked for, had locations all around South Central. When I saw what happened then, and then when I saw what happened in Ferguson, which was almost a replay of the L.A. riots, I finally said, we have to put something together that tells the other side of the story, because all we get in the liberal media is one side of the story. It's all anti-white, it's all anti-Christian, it's all anti-heterosexual, it's all anti-white European. And finally I said, we have to tell the other side of the story, and you can only push people so far, Tex, and I believe that the pendulum is going to swing back the other direction, because you know, people know the truth now about Obama. They know the games he's playing. And hopefully, you know, we can all wake up en masse, because we've hit critical mass and we can't go much further until there's a point of no return.
Well, critical mass. Let's think about that. Now, my wife, Wanda, she has goodwill toward all people. But she had heard about this book, Uncle Tom's Cabin, for so long. You know, here's a book that was written back during the Civil War, but actually before the Civil War, that actually inspired much of the fighting during the Civil War. Now, Uncle Tom's Cabin, Wanda thought, she'd heard it so much spoken of by blacks. And blacks basically said Uncle Tom's Cabin is a story of, you know, it basically, you know, they said, you're an Uncle Tom. If you're a black person who's traitorous to your group, to your black race, so to speak, then you're an Uncle Tom. And Uncle Tom was really looked down upon, right? He was a no-good traitor who did whatever the white man asked him to do. So that's what she expected to read about Uncle Tom. And I'll tell you, she got that book, and she cried about it. Uncle Tom was a Christian. Uncle Tom died. He was, as far as I can tell, was basically tortured or beaten. Now, here's the thing. How did we get the wrong idea about Uncle Tom? I mean, how do we get the idea about all of these things? How do we get the idea that Jay-Z Knight is a great hero or that Beyonce is who shows her everything she's got, you know, right up on stage, that she's a wonderful black girl. I mean, these are sick, demented people. They really are. And of course, there's many whites that are just, today we're just talking about the blacks. Come on next week, Victor, maybe we'll talk about the whites for a little while. Because we got plenty of them too. But where did they get, you know, she ended the book by saying Uncle Tom was a wonderful man. Mm-hmm. Uncle Tom, certainly he didn't take a knife and cut his owner's throat. You know, he didn't have that capability, but what he did in his own way was to reach people for Christ. There is a book where many people reached Christ studying about Uncle Tom. And now the blacks say, oh, Uncle Tom, you're an Uncle Tom. You're a no good black. They're demented people. And I'll just say that, but where did these ideas come from? I think blacks were on their way to freedom, to equality. In the 60s, and then bingo, this state of dependency that you talk about blindsided them. And today, I think only the minority of blacks are clear-headed or level-headed, who understand what's going on. And they're the ones that are not in slavery. They work hard. They go to school, and they want to improve themselves. Why is it, though, that 96 or 98% would vote for a communist socialist that hates our Constitution like Barack Obama?
Well, and a state of dependency is the worst form of existence a person can have. And if you look at the situation, we'll go back, and P. Papahericles, who was one of the co-authors of this book, he studied this whole movement, and it's ironic that you bring up Uncle Tom's Cabin, because Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote that book, he pinpoints that as the precise moment in American history when the pendulum started to swing in the other direction, how they castigated Uncle Tom and so forth. So that's a very timely book that you mentioned there, and Pete said that was the beginning of the end. But anyway, if you look at a plantation where the slaves were, they had their homes, their clothes, and their food all provided for them, okay? Mm-hmm. If you look at the projects today, they have their homes, their clothes, and their food all provided for them via welfare, food stamps, and on and on. So what's the difference? Well, on the plantation, at least the slaves had to work. In the projects, there's no work whatsoever for them. The unemployment rate is higher in the project, sometimes 40, 50, 60%, than it is anywhere else in the country. What we have, Tex, is that this sense of purpose has been eliminated. When you take a man's work away from him and his desire to work, you've taken away a big part of his purpose. Well, that's what's happened with these social engineers like Barack Obama and George Soros and Eric Holder, and on, is they become so reliant on the government that what happens? They lose their dignity. A man with no dignity is no longer a man. And that's what's happened in the black community. And it's sad, especially like I said earlier, when I interview these black leaders that are opposed to Obama and company, is you can hear it in their voices, text, that they're hurt to the very core of their soul, that they hate seeing what's happened to the black community. And we're, right now, Tex, on this show, what you're doing and what I'm doing, we're giving more help to the blacks than any of the black leaders from the NAACP or the Black Congressional Congress or Holder and Obama and Sharpton and all of them. We're doing more to help the blacks than they are, yet we're the ones that are criticized. If they hear this interview, they'll say, look at those racists, how dare they speak like that? Well, when you ask the question, how did we get this point? Why aren't we being told the truth? One of the best statistics in this book, and I won't give too many out because I want people to buy this book also so they can learn for themselves and give it to other people, is you mentioned a little bit earlier the rape statistics. Now, these statistics don't come from me or from American Free Press, or from conspiracy theorists. They come from the Department of Justice. And in 2005, this is just this year that I'm quoting, in 2005, the Department of Justice issued a report. It was called the Criminal Victimization in the United States. And they said that in that year, black men raped 37,460 white women.
37,460 white women. In that one year, over 37,000 were raped by black men.
Now, in that same report from 2005, they said the number of white men that raped black women was less than 10.
Wow.
In all of the United States. So that's a 3,700% higher rate of blacks raping white women than whites raping black women. 3,700% higher.
So if you're looking for a black rapist who's escaped, you don't go out and say, we're looking for a rapist who's, 5'10" and weighs this. You say, we're looking for a black man. We're looking for a black man.
Right. Yeah.
If you know he's black.
Here's the big question, Tex. You've heard of this organization. It's called the National Organization of Women, NOW. Their primary purpose, they say anyway, is that they want to protect women, right? They want the betterment of women. So here's Victor Thorne, who has no resources. NOW has a multi-million dollar budget. They can do all the research they want. Why did it take a book like America's Racial Powder Keg to have this statistic out there? Why isn't the National Organization of Women running ads on every television station, in every newspaper, in every magazine, putting up billboards, and citing this 2005 Department of Justice report that says black men rape white women at a 3,700% higher rate than white men rape black women? Why don't women know about this? Think of the injustice that's being done to women that they're not being warned about this.
Oh, absolutely. I remember several years ago, maybe you remember the case, but there were two professors from the Midwest, I believe, who did a study of a crime in America, serious crime with guns and so forth. And they found that everybody's all talking about, it's guns in America and Americans have too much guns and there's too much crime. And they say that in countries like Japan and in Germany, there's almost no crime at all. You can walk the streets early in the morning by yourself and nothing happens to you over in Japan or Germany or someplace like that. But in America, there's all this crime. But these two professors, what they did was they took the statistics and they looked at the crime in America and they found that if you took the black people out of America, okay, and just left the whites, our crime rate would be the lowest in all the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing. We have less crime rate among just the whites than does either Japan or Germany.
Yeah, I wrote an article a couple of years ago for American Free Press that says that in every single major category of crime, it's decreasing. Murder, violent crimes, assaults, rape, they're all declining in every category except for African Americans that live in urban centers. That's where all the crime is. So if you take out Chicago and New York City and L.A. and Miami and on, St. Louis, if you remove this, the crime rate is virtually non-existent in America. Now, we also heard texts when Michael Brown was shot down there in Ferguson last year by Darren Brown, and it's like, there's an epidemic of whites killing blacks. That's what we heard on MSNBC and CNN and so forth. Well, in America's Racial Powder Keg, you'll learn that over the last few decades, depending on how far back you want to go, that blacks killing other blacks totaled anywhere from 200,000 to 350,000, depending on the time span. Now, who's killing all the blacks? Where's the epidemic, Tex? It's not whites killing blacks. It's not white men raping black women. It's blacks killing blacks.
Well, I don't know of any white men or women who say, let's just take a drive down to the black area of town and shoot some people tonight. I mean, they don't even go in that area of town because they're afraid they'll be shot. So there's very little crime of white on black. Now, let's get to these cities in America. I remember back around 1960, 61, when I was in high school. I can just, you know, point to the baseball analogy. They had all these baseball teams in these great American cities, you know, Cleveland, Chicago, Detroit. And each one was a great American success story, and they all had a baseball team. They didn't have many baseball teams down the Southwest. Remember with the first time when the Bronx team, New York, went to Los Angeles?
Hey, yeah. Right.
And the Dodgers and all that. And suddenly, you know, California had a couple of teams. But here's the thing. Now when you look at these cities, Camden, New Jersey, and Chicago, and Detroit, and Cleveland, all of these great, great northern cities, they're all trash bins. In fact, I mean, photographers come into Detroit all the time wanting to see a great failed city, wanting to see a horror story, and they get it, and they send the pictures back to their home country. Isn't it true that everywhere the blacks have taken over in one of these cities, everywhere they become places for Looney Tunes, and the crime rate goes up, the real estate goes down, and today, if you want to go to Cleveland or Chicago, you can buy a house for a buck.
Yeah.
You can buy a whole house for a dollar. Of course, I wouldn't want to spend the night there. You'll get robbed.
Yeah.
Or killed.
Yeah. Well, let's extend this analogy to South Africa. You remember Tex all through the 80s, 90s. South Africa, that's the apartheid. That's the most racist place on the planet Earth. So finally, the whites got thrown out of South Africa. The blacks came in. They said, we want to rule ourselves. Now, Johannesburg was the only cultural accomplishment in all of the African continent. That's because the whites went in and were the ones that built it. But the blacks said, no, apartheid cannot stand. We want the whites out. We want black rule. And so now there's black rule. It all started with Nelson Mandela. Well, what happened was that the crime rate skyrocketed through the roof. Poverty skyrocketed through the roof. All of the farms that whites had owned and operated now were taken over by the blacks. And guess what? Now there's not enough food. And what are the blacks doing? This is only after a couple of decades. What are the blacks doing? They're begging the white farmers to come back in and take over the farms again because they're running out of food because the blacks simply either refuse to or don't have the competence to run these farms. So people say, oh, yeah, well, that's South Africa. Well, I say, no, it's not only South Africa. Point to Detroit, Michigan. And that's what happens when you have 60 years of white liberals and blacks running a city. They ran it into the ground, and I was in Detroit. I had a buddy that lived out in that vicinity back in the 80s when I was on the road. And Detroit, even in the 80s, was still a beautiful city. You can't call Detroit beautiful today.
No, it's a trash. The whole place is a trash bin. There's very few nice areas, and million-dollar mansions are being sold for $20,000-$30,000. They're not even worth that. They're, you know, but it's a shame that all these black, let me just say it flat out, black criminals took over those cities, and they appointed other black criminals to high positions. And I think the same thing is going to happen to a lot of the Hispanic areas of the United States, where they're just robbing and stealing, and the corruption among the Mexican-American politicians is terrible. Well, where are we going in all of this? In America, Victor, we see now, you say it's sort of the end game. Maybe things are going to change now. But, of course, they won't change as long as we have presidents like these. Or maybe it will. Maybe the blacks have had enough. You know, I cannot imagine good black people wanting to live in those conditions. And I see periodically some black person that was raised in a ghetto that somehow struggled and pulled himself up by the bootstraps, and today is a success. And I see more and more black successes, but it's almost always because they just had this inner fortitude. They didn't really get, you know, they weren't government dependent. Is this what's going to happen? Are the blacks going to be allowed just to go down into the morass, to sink down, to the bottom of the septic tank with only a minority being strong enough and vigorous enough and good enough,
well,
let me just put it.
Yeah.
Is that going to happen?
That's the blacks have to make a choice right now. Do they want to remain in this victim mentality where it's always somebody else's fault, or do they want to pick themselves up by the bootstraps, take responsibility for their lives, regain their dignity, no longer be dependent on the government and the handouts, and then they have to look and say, who is behind this? Who in the black community is behind doing what they've done to us over the last 50 or 60 years? And I've narrowed down text, really. I don't know how much more time we have, but I'll go through it quickly, that there's three characteristics of these black leaders. One, and you said it a couple times already, they're communists. They're Marxists. Obama, Holder, all of these guys, these are commies. They're Marxists. The second is that they believe in what's called black liberation theology. And this all goes back to Reverend Wright and his church, where they say that the only God is a black God, and this black God will take vengeance against anybody that doesn't worship the black God, okay? This is the kind of garbage that Reverend Wright was spewing to everybody in his pews while Obama sat there for 20 years. And the third characteristic, and this goes right again to Obama, is that they have a hatred of America, a hatred of our founding fathers and our Constitution and our customs and traditions and our heritage. They have a hatred for our people. Now, America is a melting pot, but there's also something called you have to integrate yourself into the overall society. And when you're so extreme with pants hanging down and listening to rap music and speaking in Ebonics, you've basically said, I'm not fit to function in society. Mm. That's no way to regain one's dignity or to become successful. And, you know, I said it before, but I would plead with Obama, go out there on your bully pulpit and give this message to the black community, because they're the ones who fared the worst under Obamanomics over the last 6 years. Unemployment in the black community is through the roof, and there's no turning back right now, because for 6 years they've all become dependent, they're all on the government dole, and these people have almost lost the will, not only the will to work again, but the wherewithal to work again. So that's where we're heading, Tex, and unless, you know, people like us get this message out, if we have to not be so afraid of political correctness that we're afraid to tell the truth. And unless we do these things, there is no turning back.
Well, Victor Thorne, I want to thank you. You've done your part. You really have. This great book, America's Racial Powder Keg, available right here on Power of Prophecy. And I want to let white people know, too, we're also going into a state of dependency. And I see white people sliding into this horrible morass. And I think the same thing is going to occur. We're going to see the white multitudes move right into it. And it all comes down to, do you serve God? You know, you got to serve somebody. You got to serve somebody. You can serve the state or you can serve God. Who are you going to choose to serve? Make that decision today. You can't put it off. Make it today and make it God. Thank you again, Victor, for being our guest.
Well, I want to thank you, Tex, and all your listeners and everybody at Power of Prophecy. You're the nicest people around, so thanks as always. It's much appreciated.
Thank you so much. Friends, until next week, this is Tex Mars reminding you there is power in the Word of God. Tune in each week and discover the power of prophecy.